Paul Stevenson here live on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And do keep this network on the air, please, and donate to us and be as generous as you can. You can do that by credit card or debit card on calling in on 512-246-9549, extension 3. And you can also do that toll-free, 800-724-2719, extension 3. You can also mail in checks, cash, money orders to RBN, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And if you click on the yellow donate button, and you can pay by credit or debit card there too. And if you're feeling particularly generous, you can donate to me in my show on Stevenson_P5@sky.com on PayPal. I don't often ask, but it's been a little difficult for myself over the last few weeks for one reason or another. So if you want to donate to me, you can do that on PayPal again, Stevenson_P5@sky.com. So joined here by Patrick Slattery. And Patrick, I think you're going to really enjoy, I don't know whether enjoy is the word, probably it has the potential to maybe even ruin your day. It's kind of ruined my evening yesterday when I got wind of this story that I'll talk to you about. But firstly, thank you for joining me, Patrick. We are both away from our home abodes today, but that's all the kill we'll get. But thank you. Okay. So, right. The story, unless you want to, you've had this, we should mention that this money has been passed. This bill, which disgracefully, but I guess not that surprisingly, the money has been passed for Ukraine and Israel, but nothing for the border, I believe. Nothing for actually that actually is in the American people's interests.
Well, yeah, and of course, the money for the border, it's really not even a money issue. I mean, the issue with the border is the complete lack of will in enforcing it. I mean, there's no problem in terms of money. What would they, if they were to appropriate a bunch of money for the border, for all I know, Alejandro Mayorkas would just use it to pay for more hotels. I know the hotel I usually stay in Chicago, the whole thing, I had a reservation for about 6 weeks from now, and the whole hotel has been taken over by migrants, and our reservation got summarily canceled. So, you know, even then, this idea of money for the border is probably just kind of a trick anyway. But supposedly that was something that the Republicans wanted. Border security. And so as part of the deal, you know, the original deal was, all right, Democrats want Ukraine aid and the Republicans want border security. So let's have everybody get what they want. And the Democrats were like, no, because you'll keep out foreigners. And so the Republicans were like, all right, I tell you what, you can have money for Ukraine, and we won't have money for the border. I mean, of course, the thing, one of the intervening factors was the whole Israel thing. And most of the Republicans just really, really want Israel to have $26 billion more, which is basically about 9 years worth of the regular military aid to Israel. But we'll see. That's all passed. Everything got passed, and then money for Taiwan got passed because two wars enough. And whatever it was going to be for the border, I don't even think that got offered. There was one other thing that was voted on and didn't pass, and it slips my mind what it is. But what's going to be interesting is, so the House of Representatives adjourned, and they're going back to their home districts for a week. And Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tom Massey and Paul Gosar, three of these maverick MAGA Republicans, are planning on having a vote on removing Speaker Johnson. I call him Dick Johnson. I know his name is actually Michael. but I think Dick is more appropriate. So they're going to be voting on Dick Johnson, whether he should be removed as speaker. And at this point, because of a lot of things, because so many Republicans have resigned, and in some cases, and one was removed by Republicans, George Santos was removed because he had the audacity to pretend to be Jewish, to pretend to be a Jewish banker from Goldman Sachs when he ran for election. You're not allowed to. If you're Jewish, you can pretend not to be Jewish. But if you're not Jewish and you pretend to be Jewish, then that's a big issue. So they kicked him out of Congress, endangering their own majority. And then the most recent guy, he resigned, but he announced his resignation at the end of March. And if he had just left Congress then, there could have been a special election that would have replaced him with another Republican. But he purposely delayed his departure so that there couldn't be a replacement. I mean, the whole thing is just a theater of the absurd. But the long and short of it, about at the end of this month, there will likely be a vote on retaining Dick Johnson as Speaker, and if he is retained, it will be with the support of Democrats. And so that the whole idea of Republicans controlling Congress.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, I
suppose that, potentially there could be a silver lining to this cloud, because like you just said, you could end up having the Democrats supporting this cloud. And it has the potential to expose the facade of this divide between Republicans and Democrats, and that you have essentially a uni party there, and Marjorie Taylor Greene hinted at that this sort of exposure that it can be potentially rectified as the American people see what a farce the whole thing is, words to that effect anyway, and that they can make their voices held at the ballot box. But it does, I think, have, if you have this guy being kept in a job by the Democrats, I mean, it really does expose the whole absurdity and hypocrisy of the whole thing,
Yeah, and now he's revamped the old George Bush line that was written for him by a Canadian Jew. But what was that guy's name? He George Bush had a speechwriter who wrote The Axis of Evil, which was Iran and Iraq and North Korea were the axis of evil. And what was the guy's name? It slips my mind. Some Jew from Canada wrote that for him.
Yes.
But now Speaker Johnson has said there's a new axis of evil, which is China and Russia and Iran. And that's the axis of evil. He's useless. He's worse than useless. He's Dick. He's Dick Johnson.
Yeah. Well, we haven't spoken since, I think, certainly not since the Israeli attack on the consulate. I think we did speak about the attack on the consulate, but of course, since then, last weekend, we had the Iranian response, which was quite the response. Both sides, claiming, in quotes, victory, if you like. The Iranians claiming that they overwhelmed the air defenses, that they used up, 1.3 billions worth of air defense missiles in that one evening's attack, and that they still managed to hit an important military air base in Iran, and of course, showed resolve and showed that they have the capability to attack directly and overwhelm their air defenses. I mean, I heard, I forget who it was, but there's one report that suggested that as much as 50% of Israel's deployed air defense missiles were used in that attack. I mean, obviously they have a huge stockpile of missile defenses, but in terms of being deployed, being active for any one, one night's defense, that was half of them. So if there was another 300 missiles by Iran, I presume that by that stage, if this is to be believed, that they would have to then go into their stockpile and redeploy and, you know, bring about more active air defense missiles, which I presumably would take considerable time. So this is why some are saying, who are more on the pro-Iranian side, or at least trying to look at it objectively, say that this was a victory. This is a big warning shot for Israel, exposing their vulnerability, that they could be left very quickly with no air defenses in any one given attack, you know. And, you know, 1.3 billion in one evening. I mean, on the other side, you have, of course, the Western Zionist puppets who are claiming victory, that this is an embarrassment for Iran. They fired all these missiles and they were all shot down, you know?
Yeah. I think things are really, really falling apart for Israel. And, you know, on the one hand, you've got, okay, so $26 billion in worth of aid. But the point has been made regarding Ukraine, which gets $61 billion. That, okay, so that's a pile of cash. But a pile of cash, what are you going to do? Take the cash and beat people with the cash? The weapons don't exist. So this is a point that lots of people have made. Now, of course, Ukrainians are fighting Russia, which has a real army. And the weapons to beat Russia do not exist. Now, Israel, on the other hand, they're not actually fighting an army. They're simply trying to move forward this genocide of Palestinians. They would just as soon have the Palestinians leave. Ethnic cleansing, right? That's what they'd like. They'll genocide them until the population is willing to move and other countries are willing to accept them. I mean, that's very, very transparently the game. So the $26 billion, if it's, I suppose that will buy them the types of weapons they need to terrorize civilians. It's a very different thing. But what you brought up, you see, if I mean, it's one thing for Israel just to slaughter civilians with bombs in Gaza and now increasingly in the West Bank. But once they actually have to fight a real force, and, you know, they fought Hezbollah before, and while they were embarrassed by Hezbollah, they did kill more Hezbollah militia members than Hezbollah killed Israeli soldiers. It was still considered a victory for Hezbollah because they thwarted Israel's intentions. But of course, Iran is a very big country. It's got it's technologically advanced. If Israel, I mean, the real question is, and I'm not a military analyst, but the real question is, what can you do with $26 billion if just, you know, one relatively cheap barrage of drones and missiles on one night caused Israel to burn up 1.3 billion. I mean, at that rate, that's 20 days worth of cash, basically.
Yeah. And it is important to point out the Iranians telegraphed this. I mean, they knew this attack was coming, so they had time to prepare for it. So if you add in the element of surprise and much more advanced missiles, which they do possess, I believe, well, then it could be an absolute catastrophe for Israel. Like I said, they're, you know, boasting about how this was humiliating for the Iranians. But if you telegraph, I mean, I remember watching it. I mean, you know, the news was on covering this, and, you know, the drones had been launched. And the media said, well, they should be here in about 2 hours. So, I mean, if you can't defend against something with that sort of notice, you know, I mean, it would be pretty embarrassing if you didn't shoot down about 90% of them, because they had so much time to prepare for them. And, of course, the Allies got involved to help them as well. Since then, the Israelis have responded, but unless they've done something since yesterday evening when I last looked, it has been pretty limited. In fact, I think it was Ben Gavir, who to some extent embarrassingly has called the Israeli response as lame. Because the I think the U.S. has advised or at least expressed desire on the Israeli part to not escalate this any further. And they've said things like take the victory, and they don't want this to escalate any further. We can speculate as to why that is or whether you think that's true or if there's any truth to it. But apparently this was embarrassing that, you know, these hardliners like Smotrich and Gavir and his comment were not particularly well received by either Netanyahu or the Biden administration. But again, I mean, just what I posed to you there, what do you think? I mean, is this all theater? If Biden doesn't want this to escalate, because we know people like Lindsey Graham and the usual neocon suspects in the U.S., they've been itching for a war with Iran for years. Some speculate that the reason they don't is because they don't have, you know, so many missile defenses, weaponry, and that they are concerned that what they do have, they need to send to Ukraine, because otherwise, on an election year, you know, the Ukrainian resistance, what's left of it, is, you know, collapse is imminent. I mean, the attacks by the Russians seems to have escalated in tempo. And he's worried, I think, that, you know, they're not going to, you know, be able to prolong this sufficiently in an election year. So, in other words, they're trying to keep this going, and they need their weapons and need their focus to be on Ukraine. So they don't need another war with Iran right now.
Well, I think it's really clear. And I'm sure that there's people in the Brandon administration who realize this, that things have really spun out of control. And I think you see a reflection of it in the fact that Victoria Nuland was dismissed. She had been pushing for nasty surprises for Vladimir Putin, nasty surprise, perhaps 130 people killed at a rock concert, something like that. And the thing is, the people who are involved in Biden's cabinet and his administration, these jobs that are political appointments, they're there and they have their power and they have their prestige as long as Biden gets to live in the White House. And once he's not living in the White House anymore, then they personally lose out. So, you know, you can look at things as the uniparty, and that's one way of looking at it, and there's some validity to that. But you also have to look at things from, like, the individual level, from that individual unit of analysis. And somebody like Anthony Blinken or Jake Sullivan or all sorts of these other people who are involved in the Biden administration, they're there only as long as he's there. And the way things are spinning out of control, he's likely not to be there very much longer. And so regardless of, you know, like, I'm sure it's obvious that Anthony Blinken is a pretty loyal Zionist Jew. And yet, Israel, I mean, if things are spinning out of control in America, I mean, gosh, Israel is just, they're just come completely off the tracks, off the rails, I guess is the expression. And, I think a lot of people see things as they've gone too fast. And if things aren't reined in one way or another, it's going to be a complete disaster. They're going to lose their jobs. And there may be some people sane enough to realize if things aren't reined in, we could have a nuclear Armageddon, because Israel's just these people in Israel are just that crazy.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They're that crazy, and that's the big problem. You know, if Israel finds itself in a position, if this does escalate, that it feels that they're losing, well, they've got the Trump card, haven't they? And I think In my mind,
when you say Trump card, is that a reference to Donald Trump or something else?
No, I suppose it could be a pun on the word Trump. But no, I meant it that they've got nuclear weapons, and I think, you know, that they wouldn't be slow to use them. I really don't think they are. I think they are that crazy, like you said. I think someone like, despite the aggressive propaganda against Putin for such things, I think it would be an absolute last resort for Putin. But, you know, the Israelis are quite capable of almost manufacturing a situation where they bring about a situation where they can use a nuclear weapon, so it's all done. You know, they're capable of escalating it to the point that that Iran attacks them in such a way where they can feel that they've got justification for a nuclear weapon. You know, I mean, it's nothing to them. They would love that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was talking with Mark Dankoff on Friday. We had a show. It was rife full of technical difficulties and all sorts of things. But one point that was made, it was still a worthwhile show, and Mark Dankoff was making the point that if Iran actually does have a nuclear weapon, that he, in his estimation, and I have to say I tend to agree with him, that would be a major boost for stability in the Middle East, because Israel being the, for all these decades, being the only country in the Middle East with nuclear weapons. You know, Pakistan's not in the Middle East. Pakistan's South Asia. That has allowed Israel to just run rampant, unchecked. Israel routinely bombs other countries. I mean, Syria for sure, Lebanon for sure. You know, when it wants to, it's bombed Iraq. It bombed Iraq's nuclear reactor back in the 80s. And
it bombed them yesterday, too.
Yeah, yeah. So
they got to mention that. Yeah, there was quite a big attack on an Iraqi base as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, Israel has just been able to operate with complete impunity. And those days need to be over. They need to be over. You know, Israel has been jumping up and down for 25 years, talking about Iran. They're just months away from a nuclear weapon. And then months go by and Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. And so some people say, see, they're not months away from a nuclear weapon. They're not pursuing a nuclear weapon. Well, the thing is they do have a civilian nuclear power industry. And if you have a civilian nuclear power industry that you're actually operating yourself, especially, you know, Iran, because of they're subjected to so many sanctions and boycotts, they're operating this all themselves. It means they've got the technology. If you've got a working nuclear power industry, then you are months away from a nuclear weapon. When the United States in 1941, it did not have a nuclear power industry. And in 1941, so many of the most basic aspects of both nuclear physics and also the engineering required to turn that into a bomb were unknown. And yet, as it turned out, the United States in 1941 was less than 4 years from a bomb, 80 years ago. And now with all this technology, you think a country like Iran isn't a few months or potentially even a few weeks from a bomb? And they hadn't put one together, supposedly. They certainly hadn't tested one because of the consequences that they would have to face had they tested one. But the world's changed a great deal now. And they are in an alliance, you know, a very real alliance with Russia and China. They conduct joint naval exercises. It's a real alliance at this point. And it is emerging as the dominant military alliance. I mean, NATO's a joke. It's gay. It's totally gay. And so everything's changing. And people, I think in Israel, a lot of this is religious fanaticism, but there may be also an aspect of the world is changing. This is our last chance to do this type of thing while, you know, America is still
the hegemon.
Big and strong enough. Yeah, well, it's still hegemonic. But I honestly, I think that's a miscalculation because America, I don't think, is hegemonic anymore.
Yeah, well, according to John Mearsheimer, who I have certainly some respect for, he says that the era, that what has changed by the Iranian attack is that the this kind of era of previously escalation dominance, as he referred to it, by Israel is over. Because Israel, you know, basically intimidates all its neighbors into submission. So that if Israel attacks people, which it's been traditionally used to doing with impunity, it does so in such a manner, which is so disproportionate, that it just intimidates. Well, that's what it's designed to do. But this attack by Iran has changed that. Israel no longer can, with such confidence and impunity, attack Iran or attack, you know, with such aggression. And there might be evidence for this in the limited response that Gavir was unhappy about, which he referred to as lame, because, of course, he still wants to continue this attempt at escalation dominance. But now that this attack has happened, the Israelis quickly realized that their air defense systems could be very quickly overwhelmed. And if some sources are to believe, to, you know, people like Douglas MacGregor, you know, there is a, you know, an infinite supply of air defense missiles, particularly. Now, you've seen the Russians have employed this tactic with cheap drones in Ukraine. And as I understand it at the minute, the Ukrainians are almost entirely out of air defenses at this point. The Russian Air Force is now flying with impunity. Huge attacks, huge bombs, huge missiles. There's pretty much zero threat from any air defenses now that from the Ukrainians. And that the penny has dropped seemingly overnight with the Israelis that, you know, we could be left very vulnerable here very quickly. So this is probably why the response has not been, you know, what we would normally expect from Israel after an attack like the Iranian attack, you know.
Well, you know, Israel is massively vulnerable. And geographically, I mean, let's just look at the geographic aspect of this. So Israel's less than 9,000 square miles. It's like 8,000 something square miles, which is about the size of the American state of New Jersey. And Iran is somewhere close to 700,000 square miles.
So it's about the size of Texas, Cleveland.
It's way bigger than Texas.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It's almost not quite three times as big as Texas, but it's more than twice as big as Texas. And so it's, you know, about 80 times, maybe as large as 75-80 times as large as Israel in terms of its area. Thank you.
impacts of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it. And how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get. And you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
It's almost, not quite three times as big as Texas, but it's more than twice as big as Texas. And so it's, you know, about 80 times, maybe as large as, 75, 80 times as large as Israel in terms of its area. Not only that, it's very mountainous, and whereas Israel's flat and on the sea. So Iran... It has all sorts of its facilities located underneath mountains, and so and then of course population wise, Iran is what it's maybe close to is like 88 or 90 million people, somewhere 80 to 90 million. Israel's got about 7.5 million Jews, and then it's got some non-Jews it's got some Arabs bringing the population up about
most of them in prisons.
Yeah, in prisons and potentially a fifth column. So Iran is just a much, much, much larger country, and Israel is very dependent on, it doesn't have its own energy resources. I mean, it doesn't even have its own nuclear power industry. It has nuclear weapons. It's got this nuclear facility that produces weapons, but it doesn't have a nuclear power industry. Now, I think actually having a nuclear power industry is strategically a very bad idea, because I look at nuclear power plants as, what do you call them? Like advanced staging grounds for the Samson option. You know, they're just sitting ducks for the Samson option.
General liability.
Yeah, I think they're a liability. But at any rate, I mean, Iran obviously as oil. It's got Israel has some high tech. It's not like it's totally without industry. It's got some high tech, but it's extremely vulnerable. And its population centers, the two big ones, Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, are only like 30 miles away from each other. So Israel could really be wiped out, even without nuclear weapons. It's so compact, and Iran doesn't have that vulnerability. I think Israel's bit off way more than it can chew. And if you look at it from individuals, from Netanyahu, his point of view, he doesn't have he's an old man already, 74, I believe. He doesn't have much of a future if he leaves office. Maybe he wouldn't wind up in The Hague, but he could wind up in an Israeli prison. He's got all this corruption charges. So many of the people in his cabinet have these very particular religious views, very messianic religious views. It's all crazy. And so if you were to consider Jewish power to be some like centralized thing, this wouldn't make any sense. But if it was centralized, would anybody plan things this way? It just seems so bizarre. We'll see how it turns out. Hopefully we'll see how it turns out and we don't all die in the nuclear Armageddon. That's always a possibility too.
Well,
I ran out of gas. I'm kicking it back to you.
Yeah, well, it does remain to be seen. Israel are, of course, still very capable of escalating this further, which will then, invite a larger response from Iran. And then, like I said, it's all bets are off again. At the moment, it seems that there's been some kind of, I don't know where calm is the word, but, reluctance at this point to escalate it to the extent that, you might have thought was inevitable before the Iranian attack. Like I said, I think there are some more cautious heads in Israel who are a little bit more circumspect about their usual escalation dominance, as Mersheim refers it to. But we'll see. I just wouldn't put anything past the Israelis. I think it's against their better nature not to be that aggressive. I think it is their natural state of being to be extremely aggressive, and anything that that goes against that is unnatural for them. I believe it must be causing huge frustration. Like I said, this guy Gavir has already voiced his frustration at it. But over here, I'm in Europe, but in the UK, the anti-Israel or the pro-Palestinian marches continue. I guess they're marches for calling for a ceasefire and an end to the mass slaughter in Palestine. But yesterday it took a little interesting little twist where there was a Jewish individual, a Jewish gentleman, that found himself at the center of a media storm here yesterday. Well, what turned out to be a media storm where he was threatened to be arrested after he, by his own account, rather innocently, found himself at this march after he'd been to the synagogue, and he just sort of happened to stumble upon it, I think, is how he sort of expresses this. He said he had been walking in the capital after attending the synagogue, and he was not there to, counter-protest or cause any problems. Turns out, though, this particular individual Jew was no ordinary Jew. Happened to be none other than Gideon Falter,
who, if you're not familiar with that name, he's the chief executive of Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. So Falter turned up innocently, you know, just went for a stroll, really, after the synagogue, and found himself at this protest, which is anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian, wearing his kippah skull cap, and was approached by a police officer who basically, and I quote, said, "I'm not accusing you of anything, but I'm worried about the reaction to your presence here," and threatened to arrest him if he didn't leave for causing a breach of the peace, and that his presence was antagonizing. And this is the line, well, this particular line is the one that has generated the most controversy. Said, "You are openly Jewish, and your presence here is potentially antagonistic." So I'm not sure if this guy meant to use that word, openly Jewish, but obviously if you say you're openly Jewish, you know, it has the strong implication that there's somehow, you know, that there's something wrong with being Jewish.
Oh, my goodness, there might be something wrong with it.
Yeah, but I think what he meant to probably say was that you are obviously Jewish because you're wearing a kippah skull pack. But he said openly Jewish. And if you say openly Jewish, it sort of suggests that, you know, that you're not supposed to be, you know, revealing yourself as a Jew. You're, as a Jewish person, you're supposed to be so, so what's the word I'm looking for? Repressed and so discriminated against that you're supposed to keep your Jewishness private, I guess. Anyway, my own interpretation of this is, in the context, is he meant you're obviously Jewish because you're wearing a kippah skull cap. Okay, let's unpack this, because strictly speaking, we are over here with our libertarian values, apparently, in the West, in the UK, and the, you know, we are the founders or the, you know, or whatever, of democracy or whatever we like to call ourselves that anyway. Not the founders, but, you know, in modern civilization, we like to take credit for being the pioneers of democracy and free speech and all of these things. So I disagree, because the complaint here, of course, I mean, Mr. Falter here, of course, focuses on the fact that he's Jewish, as you would expect. But, you know, this is the type of thing where, and this is not new. And this, of course, is why, another reason why I'm talking about this, because Tommy Robinson has fallen victim to this. When there was free speech marches in London, which tended to get branded far right, this type of thing was happening as far back as 2018, where the police would approach you. And even though you haven't committed any criminal offense, your mere presence here may antagonize these people. And therefore, the focus is on you, even though you haven't committed any crime. And in a free country, you should be able to go where you want. And that this focuses on the individual who's not committing a crime and protecting and justifying the aggression of others as to why you should leave. And the police's job, I've heard some people in comments since this and videos I've watched, you know, is apparently to keep people safe. Well, I disagree with that. I don't believe the police's job is to keep people safe. The police's job is to, you know, restore law and order if it's, you know, threatened, and to punish and police crime. This guy hasn't committed any crime, and, you know, he should not be told where he can and can't go based on how others may react to him. So, I mean, this is an inversion of the law, and it's dangerous. But the irony is, the same thing happened to Tommy Robinson 4 months ago, and I say it's ironic because poor Tommy, you know, who gets a lot of stick, you know, from the Muslim community and the leftist media, well, Tommy turned up to show his solidarity a few months ago on a counter march, which is a march against anti-Semitism, and Tommy was arrested while he was having his breakfast. And Tommy did get arrested. Mr. Campaign Against Anti-Semitism left, so he didn't get arrested, but Tommy did get arrested. And there was about, you can see the scenes where there was about 70 police surrounding Tommy Robinson at the time. He was pepper sprayed, and they arrested him under Section 35, and I think that pertains to breach of the peace. And he was basically told that you're not wanted here, that your presence here is unwanted, and it is a threat to, you know,
the peace, essentially. But who was it, Pat, who was it who was heavily involved with this march against anti-Semitism? And who was it, by many accounts, that who was ultimately responsible for prompting the police to arrest Tommy Robinson? Well, none other than Gideon Falter himself, the chief executive of Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Despite Tommy Robinson turning up to show solidarity with this march against anti-Semitism, Tommy Robinson's considered to be not the type of person that Campaign Against Anti-Semitism wants to be associated with, because there's like a conflict of interest in some ways, and Tommy's just not wanted. He's too associated with British nationalists who wave St. George flags and this type of thing. And he was marched off, arrested, and it was indeed Gideon Falter who prompted it. So here Gideon Falter has been paraded all over the media, as you would expect, in the, you know, those who like to refer to themselves as, you know, a reaction to mainstream media. They actually joking, laughingly talk about the mainstream media as the establishment media. Well, these guys, I mean, it's like you have two main channels, Talk TV, which I would refer to as Smotrich TV on the Gavir network, and GB News, or as some refer to it as GB Jews. And this guy has been paraded all over the media, particularly in the Zionist-friendly media like GB News and Talk TV, and not one of them have mentioned the fact that this is not new, despite that they're saying this is unprecedented, that it happened to Tommy Robinson. And GB News did cover this with Tommy Robinson. They didn't give it the sort of coverage that they're giving this guy. But none of them have said, aren't you the same guy that got Tommy Robinson arrested? So this is what's going on. And by the way, since then, Patrick, considering Tommy Robinson, after he was arrested, went home, there's a little bit of media coverage, and that was the end of it. Since then, this guy, he's written an article today, and this is in a 24, 36-hour period since this event has happened. This is what's occurred since. And it's all done in this environment of, you know, that the UK has become a very dangerous place for Jews. They're a very persecuted minority. And, you know, when you look at the comments in GB News, the morons are playing right into their hands. They're falling all over for, you know, all over the place for poor Jews. You're hearing comments like, bring in the army, enough is enough, the Muslims run our country, we need to stand by the Jews, it's the Jews now, but they're coming for us next. I don't know how many comments I've heard referring to London in the 2020s, is right back to Germany in the 1930s, shame on the UK, our ancestors fought a war to stop this. You know, bring in martial law. Again, the GB News audience are the free speech kind of types, and the type of people that love our libertarian freedom. They're all calling for a ban on marches, on these Palestinian, pro-Palestinian marches. Some of them are even calling to bring in the army. Some are calling for martial law. So ideologically, they're all over the place. But in the third, sorry to be so long-winded about this, but in that 36 hours, this guy has written an article in the Times, as you do. The Met Police have issued two apologies. The first one wasn't deemed acceptable, so they've issued a second apology. And James Cleverly, the Secretary of State for the Home Department, has written a letter to the Met Police about their behavior. Now, again, compare that to Tommy Robinson. And bearing in mind, this victim Jew here was responsible for getting Tommy Robinson arrested. I mean, it really is incredible. I even went as far as looking at some YouTube channels, guys like Jeff Taylor and things like that, who would be big fans of Tommy Robinson. And they thought that he was like this. And I was kind of hoping that they might say, okay, we don't agree with this, but I mean, this guy got Tommy Robinson arrested, because these guys are big supporters of Tommy Robinson. They didn't even mention it. If you look in the comments, you'll see a few people saying, screw this guy. This guy's a hypocrite. This is a guy who got Tommy Robinson arrested. But Jeff Taylor, he's got a pretty big YouTube channel over here. Again, you're never going to talk about Jews, and it's just a complete apologetics. We need, you know, he's so zealous, you know, it's so outraged, so emotive, more so than when Tommy Robinson is arrested. I mean, it really is incredible how much we love the Jews in this country, you know?
It is incredible. Now, one thing that I've been seeing some videos from New York City. And New York City is at least about, it's got about 8 million people, and about at least 20% are Jewish. It used to be about 25%, but I'm assuming that like random third worlders are moving in. And so it's easily 20%. And I've seen just young demonstrators just getting in the faces of Jews. Some of these Jews are wearing Israeli flags, walking around draped in Israeli flags. But these young demonstrators and obnoxious women demonstrators, I mean, they're obnoxious, they're bitches, but I totally stand with these bitches. But they're getting in the Jews' faces. And you would have never seen this a year ago. And it's getting worse and more. It's getting worse because the Jews in Israel are just becoming more and more brazen, more and more bloodthirsty, and it's just a bad look. And so, you know, the young people overwhelmingly, especially young Democrats, overwhelmingly support the Palestinians over the Israelis. But it's getting to the point where respectable middle-aged and older women, they just can't square it anymore. They cannot. It's too much cognitive dissonance for the Israel to continue to think of Israel as the good guys when they're obviously just slaughtering babies. And so, I think there's a fundamental sea change. Thank you. Fundamental sea change that is starting, and it's already moved through significant part of the American population. It's moving from young to old. It's moving from, you know, black and brown to white. I mean, it's unfortunate that white boomers are the most, in terms of Israel, they're absolutely the worst demographic, and males, right? White boomer males, unfortunately, are the worst. But some of them seem to be even waking up. And once you can start talking about Jews, then a lot of things become possible. So let's see. I guess we have about one more minute on your format. Just giving you a heads up.
Again, I just wanted to point out that this guy didn't hold the
talk today. Your sound got bad. Can you try that again? No, something weird happened to your sound. I don't know what's going on.
Is it better?
Yeah, now it's better.
Okay. All right, well, Gideon Falter is saying to talk about against anti-Semitism. Let me just say this. I don't believe that he was innocently having a stroll after the synagogue. This guy knew exactly what he was doing. And if we look at what's happened since, you've had he's written an article in the Times about it. The article is called, "I Was Treated Like a Criminal for Being Jewish. The Met Police Chief Must Go." This has all been designed to basically put an end to these protests. The Met Police have issued an apology. James Cleverly, the Secretary of State for the Home Department, has written a letter to the Met Police about their behavior. This is unprecedented, okay? Someone like Tommy Robinson and others have been persecuted by the police for this type of thing for the last 5 or 6 years, and nothing happens. It happens to a Jew because this guy has decided he wants to put an end to these protests. And at the same time, we're supposed to believe that Jews have no power, that they're victims, that they're an oppressed minority. And this is what's happened in the space of 24 hours. They are also responsible for dragging Alison Shablow through the courts back in 2017 for writing anti-Semitic songs. They are also responsible single-handedly for getting Jez Turner imprisoned. And they're also responsible for getting a young guy of 21 years of age with no previous criminal record, Nathan Blagg, a Chelsea supporter, received 12 weeks in prison in 2021 for anti-Semitic tweets. And yet he's paraded all over GB News, who are grueling at the mouth and, you know, fawning all over this poor Jew. This is GB News, the home of free speech, who are bringing this guy on, who's responsible for actually getting people imprisoned for things they've said, not done, tweets, having opinions like Jess Turner, writing songs like Alison Shabro. And that's just a small sample of the campaign against anti-Semitism. Unfortunately, while some of the GB News listeners are very aware now of Israel's slaughter and have, you know, turned against Israel in many ways. When it comes to non-Israeli issues, they are just right there, 100% right behind the plight of the innocent victim Jew.
Yep.
So, okay. I mean, totally staged, I think, this whole thing.
All right. It sounds like it to me, but I think we're out of time.
Okay, Patrick. All right. Well, thank you for joining me. And sorry for being a bit long-winded about that, but I just have to break it down as best I can.
Okay. You're going to wrap
it
up?
All right. Thank you very much. Yeah, I will be back again next week, folks. And thank you for tuning in. Until then, take care. God bless.
Of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.